You're listening to The Cultural Hall with your hosts, Richie T. Stedman and Ashley Garvey Smith. It's a show about Mormon stuff.
Nephi! Ella! Samuel! Do you stand to live righteously?
Joining me here in my very own kitchen, well, it's Ryan Little and Adam Abel. You're thinking, okay, who are Ryan Little and Adam Abel? But you know these guys. You know these guys because of their prolific work amongst Mormon cinema and non-Mormon cinema, and they're in here particularly to talk to me and everyone about Saints and Soldiers, Airborne Creed. But I don't want to talk about that right now. I'm sure you guys have been talking about that a bunch. By the way, welcome. You can say stuff so people know you're here.
Thanks for having us.
There you go.
Glad to be here, Richie.
It's great.
Thank you for coming all the way out here to my house. I really appreciate it. It's certainly an honor to have you guys here. I see you've helped yourself to some water. There's Gatorade. Yes. Triple X vitamin water there.
Right there, right?
If you want it.
It's getting, acai.
It's
all
right, I'm going to do it. It's getting risky here.
I'm going to do that. That sounds like I should try that. Got a battery symbol on it here, I just noticed. I hope that's okay to drink.
It energizes.
It's what it tastes like, actually.
Okay.
So go ahead and try some of that.
Okay.
Now, you guys are doing your big tour for the Saints and Soldiers, but how, to give background, Adam, we'll start with you, because it's alphabetical order and you're used to that.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. How old you are, school, what got you into where you're at, and all that stuff.
Sure. Well, again, Adam Abel. My wife and I and our five kids live in American
Holy
Fork.
Holy cow. Really?
Yeah.
How old are you?
Yeah, I'm 36 in September.
Okay.
So, young dude.
Yeah, with five kids.
We figured it out.
Yeah.
Now we know. We put the brakes on it.
There you go. Are you done then? Five is it?
Yeah, we're good with five.
Okay.
That's good.
I'm not judging. I just wonder because everyone, you know, there's always that story of like, well, there is one special one still in heaven.
My wife is my wife's comfortable with our five, so yeah. And she's the one I let make that decision. So
cool.
She's we're good with five, but we live in American Fork. I first started in the film industry when I was 17 years old. Actually, I started out as an intern at Paramount Pictures.
Okay,
worked in the creative affairs group
here in Utah.
No, in Los Angeles.
Okay, I was gonna say
So I lived in Los Angeles and worked there. Started there between my junior and senior year of high school.
So were you born and raised then, Los Angeles?
No, I was a BYU baby.
Okay.
And then we kind of bounced around. My dad was in business and then software and those sort of things. But
Opportunity
presented itself for me to be in Los Angeles and be at Paramount Pictures. Started there when I was 17, between my junior and senior year of high school, and started out as an intern. My father lost his job the day that I was going to do it. And he's like, no, I think you should still do it. They lived in Utah and I lived down there by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no, we'll take care of it. And well, after about a month of that, my dad's like, yeah, I'm not sure if we can financially do this because I still haven't been able to find work.
Uh-huh. Wait, but as you said, between your junior and senior year of high school, so this was just a summertime thing and you were going to come back to Utah for school again?
Originally, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, originally, but it turned out because of the opportunity and because of schooling flexibility, because of the private school that I had been attending.
Well, no. Listen to this.
Well, no. I mean, don't. No, don't take it the wrong way. It was a performing and fine arts high school that was a small little institution here in Orem, Utah.
It was ballet.
Yeah. It doesn't exist
Bat-ma,
anymore.
Bat-ma.
He loves Newsies.
Yes. Yeah. But there was a little more freedom-based education, and so it allowed us to pursue the things that we were interested in. So I was down there, and my dad's like, yeah, we can't do this anymore. So one of two things needs to happen. Either you need to come home or you need to see if there's a full-time opportunity there. And so then they hired me on full-time. So I took the first half of my senior year of high school off and worked full-time there at Paramount Pictures.
Living by yourself?
Yeah, I lived with some members of the church, actually.
Sure.
Yeah. It started out that I went down there, just some random lady that I didn't even know that was friends of a friend that let me stay there. And then the bishop of the ward's like, dude, come stay with me. And stayed with him for a bit. And then my seminary teacher, because I still attended early morning seminary.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, hey, why don't you come stay with us? We got one left.
Uh-huh.
So I moved in with them. And after moving in with them, I finished up the internship and decided, hey, I want to finish. I like California. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I finished high school in California, and that's where I started.
Cool.
So I served a mission for the LDS Church. Where'd you go? Columbus, Ohio.
There you go.
Yeah.
I was another OCM. I was just north of you.
Oh, you're
Cleveland.
Cleveland.
Yeah.
Nice. Fellow.
The better one, I'm just saying.
Of course, sure. Yeah. In the heart of it all.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, we, after returning that's where Ryan and I met. When I came back, I started at Utah Valley State College at the time.
Okay. Wait, so you guys met on the mission. Is that, am I interpreting that?
After getting back.
Oh, after you got back. Yeah, okay, yeah. I'm sorry.
So I started at Utah Valley and started working at the LDS Motion Picture Studio as just a production assistant. Mm-hmm. And Ryan was an intern at the studio at that time. He was attending BYU. And
did you tell him, let me tell you, intern, if you work really hard, one day you too can have the opportunities that I've had as a production assistant?
He did it hourly, actually.
Yeah. You know, I started as an intern.
Yeah, I got that, Adam. Thanks. You told me 10 minutes ago. Thanks.
Go get my Fanta. Yeah. Go give me another Fanta.
Actually, we actually played some mean jokes on Adam.
Yes, you did. We did. It was good, though. It was a good healthy start to a good relationship.
You know, there's those overachievers on set that just want to show everybody they're the best PA on set. That was Adam and me. The rest of the PAs were out to get him. So we tried to do anything we could to make him look bad.
Like what?
It didn't work, though. He still succeeded in being the best PA.
But like what?
Well,
what did you do?
Like, for example, everybody has radios on set, right?
Okay, like you're talking like walkie-talkies,
yeah,
kind of
like
thing?
Yeah, walkie-talkies. And like the batteries would go down. And the PA's job was to get you a new battery. When your battery went down, they would signal to you, and you give them your old battery, and they give you a new one. Well, sure. Adam, you know, he loaded up his belt with like 20 batteries. Like, yeah, he was there, like he was gonna be, that was gonna be his like shining moment. Yeah,
I got one just in case, and if a case that, yeah, one doesn't work, yeah, I got another
one.
He was
an overachiever, I'm telling you. So anyway, we started taking new batteries and telling him they were dead, and then he'd run back and charge them, and we would just have him keep running back to the motorhome to charge them, and they weren't really dead.
Nice.
So we were like messing with him. So, but he got his revenge, right?
I got the revenge.
Crane on that mountain that you didn't have to carry up or down that hill twice. You'd just stay in the motorhome and watch movies.
So it comes around.
Yeah, he got his revenge.
So what about you, Ryan? What's your start? Where did you get in all this?
I'm actually from Vancouver, Canada, actually. Okay.
A beautiful place. I just ran a marathon there a couple of months ago, April.
You got web feet because it's rainy there.
The first time I ran it was awful. And for the first 3 hours and 16 minutes of that race, it was downpouring rain. And then, that's your last 3 miles for me anyway at that point.
Yeah.
And I'm just drenched.
Yeah.
Soaking wet. Steam is coming up off of my body. My clothes weigh about 50 pounds at that point, and I come across, and my feet, like you say, not webbed, but just hamburger meat is what they look like because of all the rain. But this last time, beautiful.
Oh, good.
Absolutely
good.
Beautiful.
Yeah, no, you know, being in PE class, you know, in high school was constantly like that. Oh, yeah, I'm wet again.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But used to it.
Yeah.
Run a mile.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm very comfortable with being wet, I guess. But anyway, but no, I'm from Vancouver, Canada. My dad's actually from New York, and my mom's from Toronto.
Cool.
So I actually have two passports. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, I can just kind of wander and live wherever I want, which is what I like. But I kind of got my start. My family are all a bunch of photographers, and I really wanted to be a photographer. And so we had a camera store. My parents allowed me, back in the day when we actually shot just film, no digital, they would allow me one roll of film per week, and then I would get free development printing at the end of the week.
Oh, cool.
So that was kind of how I got started, and they would teach me kind of, you know, photography and stuff. But then at some point, and I don't know if it was in high school or college, I don't know where it was, but I got my hands on a video camera, and I thought, hey, this is even kind of cooler than stills, I think, or at least I liked it more. And that kind of turned into a love to want to be a cinematographer. And then after high school, I attended BYU.
I've never heard of it. BYU? What's that?
It's somewhere down in Provo, I think, isn't it?
Yes.
Some trees down there. Anyway, they had a film program, which was attached to, the LDS Motion Picture Studio. And I started shooting as a DP, director of photography, for a lot of student films. And then I had a couple ideas for some short films. And I thought, you know what? Well, I don't want to pay, you know, I don't want to finance these short films and have somebody else direct.
Sure.
So I ended up shooting and directing. And I thought, you know, I kind of like directing even more than I like shooting. So it kind of developed from that. And in that process, from working at the motion picture studio, I had to start with an internship and then do other stuff for them. Adam and I met through some of the commercials and shows they were doing there. And actually, what started for us was we were talking, and the way I remember it, and Adam can correct me if I'm wrong, I was sort of like, you know, I had this idea for a movie, sort of, you know, I had a basic concept of what Saints and Soldiers might be like.
Mm-hmm. Talking about the first one then?
Yeah. Okay. It wasn't the full story at that point. It was just sort of a concept. And I told it to Adam, and Adam's like, well, I know some really rich people. I'm like, okay, well, let's show them my short film and let's go see them. And we did, right? And that's kind of what happened. And they gave us money, lots of it. So
Well, let's go back before that. So,
sure.
Was the first Saints and Soldiers the first thing that you guys worked on together?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you had done some other stuff before that, each of you, that people would recognize. Go ahead.
I had worked as a cinematographer, so mm-hmm. so I was hired by Dave Hunter and Kurt Hale, who did, of course, Singles Ward and The Return Missionary and Home Teachers and their other films. Mm-hmm. So I actually started there, because we did those before Saints, right? Am I crazy?
Yeah, we
I
did those before right? Saints.
And that was kind of my start, kind of into the feature world, like actually having a job besides being a PA.
Mm-hmm. So what was that like? I mean, that's got to be cool. Mormon kid went on a mission, came back, yeah. did the BYU thing, and now it's like this explosion of Mormon cinema.
Yeah, the timing like was perfect, and I don't know why it was that way, but it just was.
Sure.
And Richard Dutcher had Guards Army come out, and that kind of, I think, in a lot of ways started it, or at mm-hmm. least had a heavy influence on that movement. And then Kurt and Dave jumped on there with Singles Ward and a couple other little films that floated around. So I think the timing worked out well, and it was good. It was a good place. I enjoyed working with them, and it was a good place to sort of kind of see what low-budget independent filmmaking was like, what to do, what not to do in some cases. And Adam actually worked on at least Singles Ward, right?
And the RM.
Yep. He did locations and different things. So we had been around each other for a few years before we actually kind of tried to do something on our own, of course. But yeah, that's kind of how it started.
So what was the connection though? Because you said, hey, you kind of had this idea, but I imagine it's not just like, hey, random guy, I really have an idea because I think this will work out and we'll end up being working together in the future. Yeah,
you'll have to tell your version of the story. Well, no, I don't remember all the details.
As much as Ryan likes to joke about badgering me when we first met each other, you know, I think that there was, you know, a mutual respect, certainly a friendship that occurred in, you know, being in the trenches and doing things for other people, that it kind of became a circumstance where for Ryan's aha moment for him when he did his student film that I was not involved with, The Last Good War, was, hey, I want to do this and let's put this together and I have an idea. And it was because of that film and his new idea for what became Saints and Soldiers, it provided us an opportunity to have something to work with. And so we then were able to show them the Last Good War. And I had, on the other side of things, he had this idea kind of percolating, and I was in a circumstance where I had two kids at the time and was like, or expecting our second child, and was like, listen, if I'm not going to figure this thing out and do what I intended to do from the beginning, and mm-hmm. that was to produce films, I'm one of the unique ones. I don't have a desire to direct. Everyone wants to direct. Mm-hmm. That's not my thing. I know that there's other people better suited for it. And that's where I think Ryan and I, as a partnership in Go Films that's been around now for 10 years, works well, because I respect the things that he wants to do and let him make those decisions. And likewise with the producing side of things, he lets me do these things, and we work well with that. But I think it was in April of 2002, shortly after General Conference, and just went to Ryan and said, dude, I want to produce a movie. Mm-hmm. We've done Singles Ward, the RM. I was involved with Brigham City. All of those capacities were just a management capacity, a location managing capacity. And said, I want to either do this or I'm going to focus my attention on getting an accounting degree.
Right.
You know, let's either I'm going to take this serious and move forward or need to switch careers.
Be honest, how much of that was your wife saying you either need to be serious about
this?
Yeah,
my wife still teases me today. She's like, you know, when we were dating, you said you were going to do like, you know, accounting and stuff.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, but are you right with what I do now? She's like, totally fine with what you do now. Yeah. But
I wonder, because and I've mentioned this before on the podcast, assuming you guys haven't listened, the reason why this podcast finally came about from rather just an idea to actually doing it was my wife saying, you know what? You're either going to do this thing or you're going to shut up about it. And so it was like, all right, okay, I'm going to do it. But it's been very much that thing where it's like, okay, well, except for me, it's been an MBA where it's like, okay, I'm going to either pursue this communication stuff, or it's an MBA. And I just look at that and go, I'm going to do this.
Exactly.
full bore ahead.
And so that was the motivation. I mean, I was attending, I was at BYU and in the business program and fully, you know, on that course, but just realized that this is what I wanted to do. And so we did it.
Mm-hmm. Saints and Soldiers came out in...
Yeah, Saints and Soldiers was filmed in January of 2003 and was released in August of 2004, because we spent a full year on the film festival circuit.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, full year before it came
out. So talk about it. For people who haven't seen the first Saints and Soldiers, tell it, you know, kind of give us a brief synopsis of the film and then your experience with it.
So the first film, Saints and Soldiers, is based on a historical event called the Malmedy Massacre, which took place during the Battle of the Bulge, which would be the January of 1944. Am I thinking, am I get that right?
December?
I've forgotten.
Okay.
We made it a while ago.
Yeah, that's fine.
So because it was December 16th was the massacre.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. December 16th. So it would have been 1943. Yeah. That's what it would be.
I'll give you a pass. It's
yeah,
okay.
Sorry. A little fuzzy all of a sudden. But anyway, we don't it's the Malmedy Massacre. I remember mm-hmm. that part. Anyway, I thought it was really kind of fascinating, the idea of there was this massacre, and then, of course, there was all this mayhem, and all these soldiers just ran into the woods, and some of them were in there for a few days before American troops showed up and kind of, you know, helped them. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it was in the winter, which is not the ideal situation to be out in the woods wandering around without food and things.
No, that sounds pretty miserable.
Yeah, and then the other concept that was sort of playing around that we discussed and it developed was the idea of, I wonder what it would be like for someone who had served a mission for the LDS Church in Germany before the war, and then to come home and then literally come back and be drafted or to volunteer to go and fight again, now fighting against the people you were just with serving literally a year ago or, mm-hmm. or 2 years ago or whatever. And so those two concepts sort of became the nucleus for the first film. And so that's what we did. And we had two writers, Jeffrey Panos and Matt Whitaker, mm-hmm. both work on it. Matt Whitaker actually went on to write all of the, I think all of them, or at least a two of them.
Two of the three.
The Work in the Glory series.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
okay.
So he's a great writer. And Jeffrey, I think, he's focusing more of his attention on being a military historian. And he's done a whole series of World War II documentaries for KUED on Utah veterans in World War II. And now I think he's working on the Korean War or Vietnam. So that's kind of his focus. So
cool.
Both very, very intelligent people who had lots of great ideas. But that's kind of, that was kind of the first film. And so we kind of worked on that script and had it done. And like, you know, like I mentioned before, Adam knew these people that were kind of interested and willing to take a risk on what we were trying to do. And we went and made it. And
how awesome was that?
It was great.
It was weird because we were like told that it's really hard to get money. And the first people we went and saw, they were like, yeah, how much do you want? We were like, really?
I'm going to need the name of those people before you guys leave. I don't need it right now, and we certainly don't need it on the microphone. But, you know.
As much as we joke about, hey, you know, I know some really rich people. I mean, these were obviously dear friends who were people that I met in my ward in California who took an interest. Their son and I were very good friends and still friends to this day. Mm-hmm. And they're very generous. You know, as a missionary, they'd send me packages with all sorts of goodies and stuff. That was a lot of fun. But but Ryan and I truly, without their vision and support of what it is they saw that maybe we could do, you know, I don't think we'd be here, you know, because they took a risk, a serious risk on us. We asked them for $900,000 as two punk kids just out of college.
That's not a lot for a film,
no.
Especially for what you're going after, right? Most films would be in the millions upon millions.
Yeah. Oh, we would have loved to have, you know, $5 million, you know?
Right?
But we just didn't think we could ask for that amount. So we asked for the least amount we could with the story that we were trying to tell.
So when you get $900,000, did you have to give $90,000 as tithing? And then we'll put this aside for this part.
Yeah.
Because it is technically gain, you know, if we want to go letter here.
There you go.
So we need to find someone else to donate another.
Since the entity they funded wasn't technically a baptized member or a recommended holy member of the church, decided the entity probably didn't need to be tithed.
Oh, there you go. Good. Did you actually think about it? I can't imagine that you did.
No, I didn't
Good.
Really think
but
about
I'm sure
it.
There are lots of people that worked on it that paid their tithing.
Yeah. On what we received, which was little, we paid ourselves.
Oh, yeah, and you don't need to tell me.
No, I don't.
Now I feel bad. Now I've gone far too far on the joke.
Now,
well, coming back in the third block, I want to talk about, I've seen the film, and I want to talk about it. I want to talk about, I obviously don't want to spoil it for people, but I do want to talk to you a little bit about kind of the making of it.
Did you see a pirated copy?
Yeah, you bet. I bought it on the streets of Manhattan, so.
Yeah, I heard that version's actually quite good.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a little special thing at the end that I don't recognize any of the people from the film in the thing at the end, and I was like, wow, this is risky.
Yeah, good they just wanted to add a little extra in there.
Surprise ending. So in the third block, we'll talk about Airborne Creed here in just a minute. Now, I've had the opportunity, as I mentioned just a second ago, to see this film. It comes out here in Utah.
Starts our platform release on this Friday.
Okay, now what's a platform release?
So basically, it starts out on some limited screens in an area where we can market to and focus on and get the word out to build what we hope then will be a grassroots effort as it rolls out across the United States. And it's being released internationally. There's about 12 territories that have pre-licensed and are anticipating a release day and date with us in international territories of the film.
Where are those places? Anything that you want to give a shout out to?
China.
Germany,
yeah, the UK, Scandinavia, France.
How do you go about that with the other places? It's just like, hey, here's a film, check it out.
Well, we have someone
who does that.
Yeah,
actually.
We have a foreign sales agent.
Okay.
Who specializes in selling film products to the international territories, because there are distributors in every territory that are looking for product to put on shelves, and so they buy the right to sell it within their territory. So like the UK, for example, is the distributor there is called Metrodome, mm-hmm. and they're a specialized independent film distributor, been very successful. The original Saints and Soldiers was licensed to them, mm-hmm. and they sold 1 million units of DVD in the UK.
Jeez!
Yeah, so it's been very successful. In fact, mm-hmm. they were kind of the driving force behind Ryan coming to Ryan and I and saying, hey, you should do another one. And of course, we're like, yeah, but we killed everyone.
Yeah.
So what do you do? And so then that's where kind of this idea that morphed to what Saints and Soldiers Airborne Creed is, as you've seen, mm-hmm. it's not a prequel or a sequel. It's an independent, unique story. And the way that it's tied to the overall brand, as we'll refer to Saints and Soldiers, is just this exploration of humanity within the bitter holes of war. So
Dave Nibley, one of the actors, said to us today, you know, I try to explain to people what it is, and the only way I can think of is to tell them it's like Twilight Zone. It's like it's a new episode on Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay.
I was talking to my dad, and he said, oh, you're talking to those guys today? I said, yeah. He said, I didn't see the first one. I said, shame on you. And he said, but do I need to see the first one to see the second one? And I said, no, it absolutely is.
No, you don't.
It's not the same story. But I want to talk about this and kind of an aside thing. It's a lot of the same people. And I think this about a lot of LDS films. So I'm not just saying this about this particular film, but I watch these LDS films and it's like, is there not anybody else? You know?
Yeah.
That's a fair question.
Like, I kept looking for Kirby Hayborn in this film to be like,
he's not there.
I know, and he's not there, but it's like, where is he going to be? I know that Kirby Hayborn is the guy from, he's in Singles Ward, he's in RM.
Sure.
We had him here on the podcast, one of the early, early episodes.
Yeah.
Episode 3 or 2, I think. But, I mean, is there a pool, or how come it seems you feel that it tends to be the same kind of cast and characters for a lot of these things?
That's a really good question, and I think Ryan has an answer, and I can certainly add to it.
Yeah, I think part of it is the fact is just, Salt Lake City in the Utah area, like any city in any state, you have actors or people who want to be actors, and there's a certain percentage of them that are the very best. And when they're really good, not necessarily, but a lot of times when they're very good, they move away. They're mm-hmm. here for a while and they go, hey, I'm actually pretty good at this. And they move to LA or New
sure.
York or somewhere. So you lose them. And then new talent comes, but it doesn't come at the speed we'd like it to.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's part of the challenge is you are a little limited on what you need. Now, sometimes parts don't require a lot and you can hire a new face and it's going to be okay. But mm-hmm. sometimes what's required of the acting that you need for a certain scene or something, you go through days and days of auditioning and you go, wow, well, we could have just called Dave Nibley for this from day one. He was the best person we saw for it. So there's a reason why you keep seeing those people, because a lot of them are the best people we have in town. And so I think that's part of it. And I wish the pool of actors, of good, talented actors, was bigger. And there certainly are good actors mm-hmm. that I have not met yet, that we have not auditioned yet, that we hope to audition in the future and put mm-hmm. into future films. As well as...
Are you talking about me? Because you can just say it.
We are.
You can just go ahead and say it.
I didn't make eye contact with
you. Yeah, I noticed. You're looking over there.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, Ryan. Yeah. Ryan, right here.
Yeah.
Right here.
I think there are actors that have the potential of being great, too. And they're just working on their acting skills and things like that. And I think in a year or two, some of those people maybe we passed on before will be awesome and right for another film.
Mm-hmm. I think the most distracting example of that for me has been, did you guys see the Book of Mormon movie?
I actually had never watched it
that it was, I don't remember the guy, but he was like, I'm fulfilling prophecy by making this Book of Mormon movie. Yes. And his plan was to make,
I remember that.
Yeah.
And it was, I went and saw it because, you know, that's what you do.
Sure.
And it was, you know, like Kirby Hayborn was a Nephite, and you know, it's just like these really stark white guys, and you're just like, do we not have even a Tanner brother in the church that could come in and play some of these roles? And that for me, I saw the film and I loved it. That's the only thing that's distracting for me, because through this podcast and just through, you know, I do some acting here at a theater locally, knowing a lot of these people, it's like, oh, hey, that's cool. He's in this film too. And so as I try and get involved in the story that I think is really awesome, I have to really suspend all belief,
sure,
or disbelief or whatever, because it's like, oh, that's Trent. Oh, Trent. Okay.
Oh, yeah. There he is. He's in our movie, right?
Yeah, he's in the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, look, it's Kurt. Hey, I didn't know Kurt, you know?
Well, let me say two things now that I've just processed what we've been talking about. If you do look at some of our other films, like specifically Forever Strong, uh-huh, you'll notice there is not that many local people in it. So it's definitely, sure, much more fresh when it comes to talent. Like, mm-hmm, you probably saw that movie and said, wow, I see one person.
Right.
That's it, you know? Or
what was your involvement with Forever Strong?
Well, we directed and produced that film.
Both of you guys?
Yeah.
Did
yeah.
That?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's one of our films.
Okay.
And so that film had a lot of cast from out of town because the budget could support that. And on this one, to be truthful, actually, we wanted to make this so quick, we actually really didn't do much of a casting session at all. We literally said, hey, here's six parts in this movie. Who do you think would be great? Oh, we'll call Kurt for that, and call Dave for that, and call, mm-hmm, Corbin for that, and call, mm-hmm, Jason for that. And we literally cast it probably like in 2 hours. So that's sort of, jeez, one of the reasons why you see all these people, is because we wanted to make a movie with our friends.
Now, where do you get the French woman, for lack of a better title?
Yeah, so
do you recognize her? I
don't recognize her, and I love her.
That's good.
She's gorgeous.
She's a new face.
Gorgeous and talented.
She just redeemed the fact that we have every other person you know.
Oh, and I wasn't coming down on you. But where did you find her?
She actually, it was interesting because, again, we did a very minimal casting, and one of the things on the original film that we got a lot of heat from international territories is that we didn't have people who were authentically that ethnicity or that citizenship,
right,
doing things. So like Kirby, as fantastic as he was in the first one, we got a lot of grief from people in the UK saying that he's not British at all. His you know, it goes up and down.
Look at his teeth, they're straight. They're he's straight. Not British.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one of the things that motivated us on this time was like, okay, fine, we're gonna get a French lady. And so Virginie Anderson, her maiden name is Fontina.
Until Anderson.
Yeah, she just got married actually right before the film was made. She got married, and so she this is her first feature. Uh-huh. I mean, she'd done some community play stuff, but
met her in Provo. What's the story?
Her uncle was played in the film as well. He was one of the French resistance people that meet.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Right, the guy with the beret and that interacts with Dave a lot. He came in because one of the military advisors said, hey, you should check this guy out. He's got his own impression, meaning his own uniform, and he owns a couple vehicles. Maybe you should have him come in and see if he can do it. And he did a great job. And we're like, how do we get a French person? And then he's like, well, my niece is living in town, and she just barely got married, and she came in, and at first there was some apprehension, like, oh, this is going to be good. And then she came in, and she won. She's beautiful, natural in her performance, mm-hmm, and she responded really well to a cast that is quite successful and quite experienced, helping her along her way, and she did a remarkable job. And she's, you know, her husband's at BYU, and she works at some translation company down in Provo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but she did a remarkable job, and in every sense, she did a fantastic job.
But for the most part, most of the actors are full-time actors, aren't they?
No.
No?
No.
Because I know Jason Wade, Jason Wade, that's what he goes by. He does firefighting, fire jumping or whatever,
yep,
and that's,
yep,
his side thing. But yep, as my understanding, Corbin Allred, who's in it, he does full-time acting
he's,
too.
He's a licensed paramedic. And attend,
oh, really?
And getting ready to attend what is it called? Physician assistant school in Portland, Oregon.
He's
pursuing a career in medicine.
Oh, really?
So that's what he does. You know, Corbin was at one time living in Los Angeles before he was married and a full-time actor. And obviously he has got quite the resume.
If you're going to live in Los Angeles, you know, if you're going to be a full-time actor, you kind of do need to live in Los Angeles. I'm not sure if there's that many actors who live in Utah who do it as a full-time job. I think it's a, I hate to say it's a hobby because I know that's probably not the right word, but it has to be somewhat. You need to have some other way to finance, you know, supporting your family and stuff. Unless, of course, your spouse is like doing really great, and then you can have the freedom to just do acting and, you know, work once in a while, because there just is not that much film work in
Utah. Is that what you guys do? Do you guys have stuff outside of what you do?
No, this is what we do.
We don't do just features, though. We've done commercial work, some industrial. So it's all related, yes, but it's not just one feature and then another feature and another feature. There's sometimes work in between, you know, as well. So, and you know, Dave Nibley, who's also one of the leads in the cast, he has a very successful graphic arts business. He's amazing, and he actually designed all of the posters and the key art that you see, the banners on the freeway and all that stuff. That's all his work. So he's very, very talented, and that's his full-time job.
The first Saints and Soldiers was pretty, what's the word I want to use? Not, I shouldn't say pretty, but it was Mormon-esque.
Sure, it was easy to delineate his Mormonism as a Mormon,
right.
But as a non-Mormon, there were some that caught on to it, but most of them were like, okay,
right. And I don't get that feeling at all in the second one.
No.
So why the change? Is it, man, we want to back off on this?
No.
Or what was the thought behind it?
I think for Ryan and I, and Ryan can certainly chime in on this too, but we're having worked on a lot of the early Mormon cinema, and it was fun. Mm-hmm. They weren't our movies, but just saw that's fun, but there's a limited audience for that. And we're driven by telling stories that will have a broader reach.
Mm-hmm.
And Saints and Soldiers, I think, spoke to that with its international, you know, awareness and success, that we're driven by allowing our faith to dictate, you know, certainly inform our work, but not necessarily become our work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, you know, exploring themes of humanity and goodness and war, and, you know, redemption and forgiveness and those
sort of things. Yeah, that's only Mormon people. That's nobody else.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah. We're
Mormons,
the only ones that know that stuff.
We got the corner on that
that's
stuff.
That's right.
Being Christian, that's us. That's nobody else.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting because, you know, as we're in the process of rolling the film out, there are theater chains, the large theater chains of their top film bookers and buyers have been screening the film. So you have the guys in Cinemark, for example, which are headquartered in Columbus, Georgia. And then you've got Carmike's in Columbus, Georgia, Cinemark's in Dallas. But they've been watching it, and the guy at Cinemark, or excuse me, at Carmike, specifically told our booker, he goes, I'm a Christian. He goes, I know that you Mormons made this, but this is a Christian movie.
Yeah.
You know, so it's interesting to see people's reaction to it. So I think because we are Mormon filmmakers, that there's an assumption that what it is we're creating is some sort of, you know, propaganda or specific for the Mormons, and that's not for our case. That's not the circumstance.
Well, and it was interesting for me because and my wife can attest to this. We were sitting here watching it last night, and I kept looking down at the little, you know, like timing bar on the bottom, and I'm like, they got 20 minutes to make this Mormony. When are they making this Mormony? You know what I'm saying? Because I kind of remembered what I remembered from Saints and Soldiers, the first one, and there was certainly that element. And I'm like, okay, so is it the French woman? We're gonna find out. You know, we're gonna flash forward, and she found the church. Okay, maybe that's, you know, or is it that they're gonna, you know?
Yeah.
And so I kept watching and going, oh no, it's just a really well done film.
Thank you.
With Christian values, and it's not, and here comes the book, you know, fired up at the end, which I'm ashamed that I kind of, you know, that's where I was thinking that it was going, that I didn't give you guys the credit to be like, man, here is going to be a great film that doesn't have to go, Book of Mormon, take the Book of Mormon, read the Book of Mormon, like some of these other earlier films.
Well, you know,
we could always get you a director's cut that does that if you prefer.
Yeah, we could do that. You know, going back to the first film, we didn't call it Saints and Soldiers because we were thinking like Latter-day Saints. We called it Saints and Soldiers because we were thinking about people who did saint-like type things.
Sure.
You know, especially like laying your life down for someone else. That certainly isn't something that Mormons necessarily do.
No, we got the corner on that, too.
Oh, we do?
Yeah.
Okay. See, I need to reach the church news or something because I didn't realize what I'm supposed to be up on. But anyway, But, you know, so that was kind of a theme that we wanted to go through both films. Sometimes I think people who are specifically Mormon, I think, view the first Saints and Soldiers and go, well, that guy's Mormon. That's a Book of Mormon. And this is what's happening. And I know that because I'm Mormon. But truthfully, we had lots of people who were not Mormon see the movie and didn't see him as a Mormon. He could have been any kind of somebody who went on a mission. He
sure.
could have been from any church. And that doesn't necessarily have to be a Book of Mormon. That could be a Bible, and it didn't matter. And they didn't think that, like, oh, it's Saints and Soldiers, so it must mean LDS saint, you know? Mm-hmm. So we find it completely entertaining when people will say to us, oh, you know, that's my favorite Mormon movie. And I'm thinking, well, you only say that because you are Mormon and you perceive that all these things that you're seeing are you know, LDS things. Mm-hmm. But then we'll see someone who's not LDS at all, and they'll see it a totally different way. And it's just funny to us. How
does it bother you?
No, not really. It doesn't really boss. We understand, so it's okay. But we were at the Heartland Film Festival. This was so awesome.
Where's Heartland?
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Okay.
And this gentleman came out, and he obviously had been emotionally moved by the film. You know, I you know, probably got a little teary-eyed or whatever. And he said, you know, I've been waiting so long for someone to tell a movie about a Baptist missionary. And I'm so excited to share this with my congregation. We're all going to go see it when it comes out here. And he walked and he thanked us and walked away. And I just looked at Adam and I said, I don't know. Should we say something to him or does it matter? And then we realized, you know, that's the experience he had. That's how he saw the people. And that was okay because we didn't have to have that character be LDS. He could be whatever you want him to be. And he was Baptist to that man, and that was
sure.
It was exciting
and
for him.
It was cool because it was an experience.
Cool. It was a great experience.
It was his emotional experience with the film and what was communicated through what he was seeing, and for him to have that. And then, of course, you know, on a kind of a humorous side of things, we have the same, they're screening the same movie, Saints and Soldiers, the original one, at the Stony Brook Film Festival. We're in an auditorium of like,
which is where?
That's Stony Brook is on Long Island,
okay.
In New York.
Pretty.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a very, very pretty.
It's sponsored
place.
By the university there, and Alan Inkles is the festival director. Anyway, they screen the movie, and we're down there for a Q&A. And like I said, it's like this gigantic auditorium of probably like 800 people.
It's not a
theater, but like an auditorium, mm-hmm. where they dropped a screen and projected it. And there was some guy that just got a burr or something in his chaps about the fact that he saw that there was some Mormonism in here in his mind. And he obviously had hard feelings, and he just kept raising his hand saying, well, he's a Mormon, right? And I just remember the off-the-cuff statement that we had as, well, I don't know, you paid the $8. It's your decision.
Right.
You know,
and everybody laughed and everything, and he got up and walked out.
Because he was quite upset by the fact that Mormonism was even portrayed in any form or fashion in his mind.
Well, I think he even asked us if the LDS Church had financed the film.
Yeah, he did.
As a propaganda piece. It was very strange.
Very strange stuff.
But that's just what happens. You know, what can you do?
So the response so far from people on Airborne Creed been pretty good?
Been great. Yeah.
We actually originally screened the film first at a film festival in Los Angeles, and mm-hmm. won audience choice and the judge choice.
The grand jury award.
So that was the first indication that we had done something right. And then we've had a handful of reviewers who have told us, of course, we don't know what until the reviews come out, what they really will say. But
sure.
To us, they called us and said, I've really enjoyed your film. I'd like to interview you more. I'd like to talk to you more about it. And that never happens unless we've done something that they like. So we feel pretty positive that the reviews will be good this week.
Yeah, you know? It's been really good, and we've been selected in other festivals that will be announcing that we've been selected.
But, Con,
We did screen in Cannes, not a part of the festival,
yeah.
but a part of the market. It happens at the exact same time, and that was something we would have liked to have gone to, but we were still in the process of actually getting the theatrical distribution all squared away. So our foreign sales agent's calling us and like, all right, we screened again. Anyway, it's quite interesting.
I have to say, I think the thing that I'm not so concerned about what the reviewers say so much. I mean, it's great if they give us a great review.
Sure.
But I'm actually kind of in a weird, twisted way, more intrigued to see like if we have like two divided camps of people who are like, I like the first one better. No, I like the second one better. And just to see if I ever run into two people who have opposing views, how that conversation will go and mm-hmm. why one thinks one's better than the other. because as filmmakers, especially on this project, we see the movie so much and we're so close to it that we just become numb to it. So it's interesting to observe two other people talking about it who have a fresh perspective, who just see it as viewers, and to just see telling each other why one thinks the other one's better. You know, I'm kind of intrigued. I hope that situation happens because I'd be totally into it.
Will there be a third?
You know, everything's contingent. Contingent upon the performance of this one.
I mean,
you know, here it is a few days. I'm not sure when your podcast is going to play or not. But anyway, it's just a few days before we open here in Utah on August 17th. And our first weekend performances with independent film are just imperative to our overall theatrical distribution everywhere else. So if we can perform well here, then the bookers at the other chains around the country will then bring our film to where they're at. And so everything's contingent here. So if it does well here and this film performs well, yes, there will be a third. We like the brand because it allows us to, we like the idea of having Saints and Soldiers as a brand because it allows us to explore unique stories that aren't necessarily correlated, but still explore, you know, humanity within war. And you know, could people get tired of that? I don't know, because the stories themselves are so unique that it makes it compelling to watch and entertainment as well as inspirational.
Do you have thoughts as to what the third one might be about? Spoiler alert.
That's a good question. Well, one thing is we get submitted a lot of books from not just sometimes from veterans, but also from children of veterans saying, hey, my grandfather's amazing story, take a look. And sometimes they're great. You know, sometimes they're very, we can see how that would make a good movie. And other times they're just either too expensive to do or just not engaging enough if you're not a family member of that person. But we're kind of, you know, we want to make sure that if we do more, that it always continues to feel like we're not rehashing maybe the same kind of location and place. So we really like the idea of what was it, the long range desert group in North Africa. We really think that's kind of fascinating. We like the 10th Mountain group that were like skiers up in the mountains, so it's kind of a cool thing we're interested in. And then we're also interested in the Counterintelligence Corporation of World War II.
Very cool. Do you guys know the Airborne Creed? Can you recite it?
I cannot.
Yeah, I can't either, but our actors can. Jason Wade, who plays Bud Curtis in the film, he actually memorized it, and part of his preparation every day in coming to set, driving from, I believe he was in Saratoga Springs at the time and driving over to Alpine, would recite it. And it's a very lengthy creed, and it would take him, he'd be able to get through it maybe three or maybe four times depending on traffic. But when he arrived on set, he was like ready to go because, I mean, the creed is something that they lived by, and it is what basically motivated their actions and defined them and who they were. And it's a really awesome thing to be able to shine some light on it.
It's literally like four times as long as Doctrine and Covenants 4.
Just to put it in perspective.
Yeah, just to put it in perspective for all those returned missionaries out here. You thought that was hard to memorize. The Airborne Creed's even harder.
So the film, again, Saints and Soldiers, Airborne Creed website. Oh, you know what? We have questions that we ask everyone that comes into the Cultural Hall, so I'll ask you guys these same questions. First of all, what is your calling right now?
I teach the 9-year-olds in Sunday school.
How's that?
I love it.
Yeah?
Yeah. They're great. It's great.
Because they're still young enough to boss around.
They're still young enough to boss around. They still demand sugar from you every week, and they say funny things.
Yeah.
So they're good. I like them.
All right, Adam?
I serve as the second counselor in our bishopric.
Well, look at that. I had no idea that you were presiding at this podcast today.
He is.
Now, if you could pick a calling, this is a question we ask, if you could pick one or invent one, what would you pick or invent to be your calling?
Assistant advisor in the priest quorum, because you get to do all the fun things with the priests and not have any responsibilities other than maybe teach once every 4 weeks.
Cool.
Actually, in all truthfulness, the one I have right now is pretty great. Yeah. Yeah, I like it. It, you know, the kids are just, they're just cool, and if you, I don't know, they're just cool. They don't give you a hard time about the thing, the doctrine you're teaching them.
Yeah. Now we ask people to get up on the Ramiumptum and tell people where they can find the project, where they can find you, if they have ideas, suggestions, follow you on whatever,
sure,
et cetera.
Okay. All right, we'll just ramble. Let's see. We do have a website. It's gofilms.net.
We have a film website, airbornecreed.com.
And for the film, we also have a Facebook page, which I think is just Facebook/Airborne Creed.
Correct.
And Adam's personal home number is... No, I'm just kidding.
If people wanted to get in touch with you, though, where would you
recommend
that they say?
Yeah, just through our website. There's a contact information. You can fill out your information, and it gets right to Ryan and I.
Okay. Then the final question that we'd like to ask is, what is your favorite thing about your faith?
Favorite thing about...
Or your favorite part of your faith.
Favorite part of my faith, I believe it's the understanding of how individual the plan of salvation is and God's true love for us on an individual basis, and the experience that we have in mortality, the opportunity to discover his absolute awareness of us as individuals.
He's in the bishopric.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, no joke.
Good luck. You should have gone first.
Man alive. I don't know why this is... This was for me, but I just think the idea of just the constant reminder of how important it is to serve each other. And when you do that, not only does that person feel served or feel fulfilled, I guess, but you also feel fulfilled, and I think that's pretty cool.
Cool.
And Ryan lives that, by the way.
I live it. Right now, when we go outside, I'm going to hold the door to let Adam out.
And then you're going to carry him to the car?
I'm going to carry him, and then later on, I'm going to do his laundry. Just... And I'm actually going to feel really good about it afterwards.
That's big of you to let him serve you like
absolutely too. Yeah.
I don't do windows, though. I've explained this to him.
The film again, Saints and Soldiers, Airborne Creed, out in theaters.
August 17th.
August 17th. So check it out. And then ask him to bring it to your area if you live somewhere else.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, you can request it via Facebook.
Well, we hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body, and that when the time comes, you guys will be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.